symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
It's our very favorite ref, ooh, our favorite ref. It's time for Q&A with
Mike Yoda.
Ooh, Polly B with Mike C on ad free. 1, 2, 3, victory says
Mike Yoda.
In the sheets next to Joey with their meats for telling Joey to the boss. Late for work, they'll get cussed but have a smirk. It's
Mike, ow! Mike Yoda.
Questions one by one, till they're done. Reds patrons, lots of fun. A big home run with
Mike Yoda.
Cooking with the ref, poo-poo chef. Drinking with the Seths and Jeffs,
Mike Yoda.
Driving the Kali SUV, Crash Holly and Big Show P. The greatest ref in history. It's time for Mailbag Monday.
Mike Yoda.
Hello and welcome to the Monday Mailbag with the third man in the ring, Mike Chioda. Mike, how are you this week?
Man, I'm great, Paulie. Getting ready, packing my bags for Chicago. But getting ready for this weekend, man. So get to meet a lot of people from the ad-free shows and everybody else and get to see you again, which is awesome. And getting ready to have a good time this weekend, man.
Buddy, listen, this episode's going to drop on the 5th, so it's going to drop on Labor Day. We will have partied in Chicago together with the top guys. We would have had the live mailbag. We are looking forward to meeting so many of you there and hanging out again. It's going to be a blast. We are recording this the Tuesday before. It's the 30th of August as we record this. So listen, I want to thank all of you for getting all your questions in early. We asked you to do that last time.
Yeah.
But Mike, this is going to be a fun show. We got a lot to cover, so we're going to jump right in. But first things first, my man, 43 players so far.
Man, I've seen that. Up. Isn't that awesome, man? It's awesome, man. I'm excited. It's going to be a fun one, man. Next year, we're going to do this for a little bit of money and having like some nice little jackpot in there.
Oh, there you go.
Because you figure 40-something people, when I used to do the CIO thing with 60 people, everybody put $100 and it was $6,000 total. 45 would be the first, the winner, and 1,000 would be the second place, and 500 would be the, you know, the third place guy. You want to talk about getting interesting.
Dude. And that's right. But listen, we have a pretty good grand prize offering. If you guys haven't had the opportunity to sign up yet, sign up. It's on the last mailbag posting that we dropped prior. The link is there. Right. Again, it's working. We got 40-some people in. And, you know, you have time to make your first week pick. If you do win it all, again, you get three strikes, okay? Three strikes, Mike, because that's what we do, the three count.
Yep.
You win a photo inscribed the way you want it from Mike Chioda. You get a Mike Chioda t-shirt, whichever one you want. You get one of three options. He's going to give you three options. One of Mike's old school programs. We're throwing in $100 in gift cards at the Box Gimmick store, the ad-free store, where you can get so much merch there. And finally,
that's awesome.
You're joining us right here on the mailbag. We're going to hang out for a cameo appearance. And so, man, I'm all about this contest, bro.
I am. Yeah, I appreciate everybody signing up. We're going to have some fun with it and see who knows their NFL football. You know, we'll see who the winner is and see, you know, it's not easy picking one team a year. Can't pick any other, can't pick that same team all year, man. It's not easy. So,
have you picked yours yet? Have you picked your week one?
I sure have.
I haven't picked mine yet. So, I'm still giving it some time.
I picked somebody in our division. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. All right. We'll see what happens, man. I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be fun. I know a lot of shit talking is going to go down.
It's going to be a lot of shit talking.
I can't wait, man.
I should go against Buffalo right off the bat of the year. I want to do that.
Right. Yeah. Listen, let's jump into it this week, man. We're going to kick it off with Edward Ring, and he says, what did Mr. Chioda think of Mr. McMahon's Good Guys versus Bad Guys segment in late 1997? Did he feel like the curtain was pulled back too much, or was it time to put it all out there?
I think it was time to put it all out there. You know, in the 90s and stuff like that, in the 80s, definitely, in the 90s still, you know, you still had your heels driving with the heels, and they weren't allowed to drive with the baby faces. Baby faces weren't allowed, you know, to drive with the heels. It was vice versa. So, you know, it was very kayfabe-ish back then when that word meant something. And, yeah. You know, so, I mean, there was a lot of stipulations, good guys and bad. And, you know, and to me, you know, in wrestling, professional wrestling, you have to establish a good guy or a bad guy right off the bat. You know, especially during a match when, you know, you almost have two baby faces going at it. You know, yeah. Somebody has to turn a little bit of heel, you know, and somebody has to turn the crowd and get them to either root for the guy that just cheated a little bit, you know, in the beginning of the match, establish the heel, you know, and that's what heels have to do too in matches, have to establish themselves by doing something that makes them a heel, you know, a bad guy,
absolutely,
good guy, you know. So, yeah, I think, you know, in the 90s, you know, just put it all out there, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, heels versus baby faces, where I just put it, you know, good guys, bad guys, whatever you want to say, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, but that's it.
Hey, it was ready to turn the business on its ear. Vince McMahon did that, and my yeah. God, it started the whole, you know, that's
attitude
what
error. The attitude error, right there. That's it, Paulie.
All right. Edward goes on. Right. He says, how come sometimes a heel can cheat to win and the match is over, but other times when the heel cheats, a ref comes down to point out the injustice and the whole match restarts again?
I know.
Come on, man.
I know. I used to hate that too sometimes. You know, one time, not only, you know, like with that, that's a good question. Because one time I remember they had me going over to the timekeeper, getting on the headset, like I'm talking to the TV truck. And okay, play that tape back again, and now I'm watching instant replay. You know?
Yeah.
So then I called the match back because I'm watching the instant replay. And I'm like, why are we even doing this? Because we never do this in professional wrestling.
Right.
Why are we gonna be
Edward's
moving
right,
forward?
Man. That's right.
Yeah, right. Are we gonna be moving forward and going this route where the ref is watching instant replay now? Because
you can't pick and choose. Let's figure this out.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, and like us, you know, I've always said on the show, it's creative liberty.
That's
man.
Exactly right. What fits so that storyline? What fits that narrative?
Yes, right, and that's it. So I mean, that's what it is. It's creative liberty and whatever Vince wants to do.
Creative liberty, man. That's a blanket that covers it all, brother.
It really does. It really does.
Mark Bishop's up next. He says, "Not sure if this has been asked, but did you ever watch Nick Patrick's work as a heel referee in the NWO and his feud with Jericho?"
Yes.
This is in his, he said, if yes, what are your thoughts on the role of a ref in that type of story? If not, perhaps it's a good watch along with some clips to get your take. What do you think of that as far as the whole heel referee? Now, listen, prior to the Nick Patrick deal, let's talk about Danny Davis.
Danny Davis, right? Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say that, Paul. Shit, took the words right out of my mouth.
We've worked together way too long,
we do.
Buddy.
So, I mean, you know, Danny Davis. That was the heel ref, you know, I mean, when I was growing up, it was, you know, in the business and everything. And he was a good heel ref because he was a heel. He was a funny, I love Danny. And he was a smart ass and just a heel. And he played that character good. I like Nick Patrick and I seen a lot of stuff he was doing. And, you know, I was kind of like, damn, I'd love to be a heel ref. But unfortunately, I was like the baby face ref because we had this. You know, remember, it goes back to the match with Jericho and The Rock against Nick Patrick and the Dudleys, you know?
Yeah.
And how Nick Patrick was the heel kind of referee, you know? But I can't ever say. I never played a part as a heel ref. So, I thought it was always a cool thing to do, always maybe something I would love to do. But it just, you know, of course, I didn't have any say in that. So, I mean, it never came about in my 35 years with the company, 33 years refereeing.
But if you were presented to it, man, you would have been gay.
Oh, I would love to it.
Oh, yeah.
I would have loved it. I mean, imagine, like, I always imagine, like, you go in there and you fuck one of the baby faces over, you know what I'm saying? And you take off your ref shirt and you got, you know, you got the fucking t-shirt on of whatever, you know, whoever the heel is, or, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you just fuck the crowd, you fuck the audience,
you fuck the audience.
I mean, you fuck everybody. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, Mike. That was your motto back in the day. I know. Yeah,
but I never got the part to play that, you know. And you know, I was just always the straight and forward referee, you know, calling it down the middle, you know. So I mean, but it's cool. But I was kind of jealous of those heel moments with Danny Davis and Nick Patrick doing this thing, and You know, and I don't think anybody, can you remember anybody else playing a heel rep besides Danny Davis and Nick Patrick? Because I can't really remember.
I'm sure there are referees that have, and it's just
Tommy Young. Did he ever do anything like that?
Not Tommy
right?
Young.
Not Tommy Young, right?
Charles Robinson didn't really do anything.
No, Charles didn't do it. No.
He's straight as an arrow. I'm trying to think. What else? I'm sure. Well, you had the whole Hebner switcheroo, you know. I mean, you could say one of them was a heel with the Hulk Hogan Andre.
That's
thing.
True. That is true.
I mean, there you got your first evil ref.
That is true. That was bad. But then he was gone. David was gone after that.
Yeah, it was just a little.
Then Earl took over.
Thing.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure we could think of stuff and probably other generations, but
yeah,
I'm tired. We've been waiting for 2 hours to get this show started tonight. Peek behind the curtain, baby.
I thought it was my fault.
Well, the
like
first Snitsky, hour
like
was.
Snitsky said, it's not my fault.
The first hour was, you son bitch, okay? No, this last hour was my fault. All right. Soft Custard's up next. He said, how we doing, boys? Mr. Kyoto, I love this question. Do you have any good stories or memories from the Spectrum? That building holds a special place in my heart. I saw my first Flyers game there. And my parents got engaged in the parking lot after a WWF house show in the 80s.
Oh, my God.
That's
no
so cool,
shit.
Man.
WWF house show in the 80s, huh?
Yeah, they got engaged. Wow. Yeah.
Was it on Spectrum TV?
I don't know, man.
Because we used to do when we used to do Spectrum TV every Saturday night, I think, or Friday night, Saturday night.
So, listen, you share yours, and then I'll share my favorites, because I have a favorite Spectrum story.
Yeah, so Spectrum is awesome. It even goes back to when I was like 13 years old and I went to my first rock concert in the Spectrum, and that was Ted Nugent and the Black Crows, not a Black Crow, it was a Blackfoot and Crocus opened up for Ted Nugent. That was my first experience there in the concert, then going into wrestling and many more concerts after that. But then into wrestling, it was, you know, doing that the Rock and Stone Cold match there, and I did the first 10 minutes of the match, and I got rocked with a chair shot. You know, it was like, you know, me growing up outside of South Jersey, right, 20 minutes outside of Philadelphia, like Philly was your hometown. It was your backyard. So doing that match, so many good memories in Philadelphia, working there. You know, I always remember, I'll never forget when Road Dogg was with DX. And then, you know, of course they were heels, but they were baby faced. They were over.
Yeah.
And I might have probably told the story. And he came from the back, and the Philly was such a heel crowd, man. And I remember, you know, they went over, they did this, and the crowd just was shitting on him. And Road Dogg was on his way back. I think it might have even been in a singles match or something that, you know, they had to, like, Road Dogg had to face somebody else. And I remember Road Dogg came back from the crowd, man. He came through the curtain. He had ketchup, mustard, fucking beer, everything. Popcorn stuck to him because he's ketchup and mustard all over him. Popcorn. He might even had a wiener hanging off his shoulder. Right. And he fucking came back. He's drenched in ketchup, mustard, beer, popcorn sticking to him. And he's like, what the fuck? He looks at everybody and goes, and they call this the city of brotherly love? Everybody just fucking fell out.
Dude, that's it, man. That's Philadelphia, bro.
It is. It was Philly. You know, I mean, you know, Spectrum just had so many great memories. I remember showing up late with Joey Morella coming in from Miami when Eastern Airlines shut down. We missed our original flight. We had to take Eastern shut down. We were screwed there. Then we had to get on another flight. We got there at 6 o'clock, and Chief Jay Strombo just fucking cut a promo on us in Philadelphia. Like when we got there, I'll never forget that. That was the night I broke my tooth in the elevator the night before at 5 a.m.
Because
I walked into the elevator. Remember that?
Yes, yep.
Joey had my fucking tooth in his pocket, his front pocket.
Dude.
So, I mean, you know, Philadelphia, man, had just so many good times, man. And we used just to go, you know, all the steakhouses and stuff like that once in a while after Philly. You know, and then, you know, years later when, you know, we just go buy Chickie and Pete's after Philly and stuff like that, and Gino's, Pat's.
Oh, yeah.
And all that. So
now
we're
talking cheesesteaks.
But there were so many good times in Philadelphia. Philly is such a good fucking crowd, man. It's just a, even though I love heel crowds, you know, because they, you know, when they don't see something they like, they shit on it in Philly, you know, which, yeah, I like.
No, I know.
They tell you the truth, you know, so, but there's just so many good memories. I could be on here for another hour telling you about memories in Philly.
And then it'd be midnight, so we're not going to do that.
We're not going to do that, right?
No,
Philadelphia.
Listen, when I think of Philly, I think of Spectrum, two things, and I'll go quick.
Yeah.
Number one, I got to see non-wrestling related. That's where I got to see Michael Jordan and the Bulls play the Sixers.
Right.
So I got to see Jordan play in person at the Spectrum. Pretty freaking cool as a kid. The other thing is, that's where I saw my first wrestling event ever of all time. 9 years old.
Right.
December 13th, 1986.
Nice.
Philadelphia Spectrum. Hulk Hogan defeated Paul Orndorff in a cage match. It was on Prism. And friend of the show, Richard Land was able to actually find the video for me and get it to me just a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I actually have the entire card now.
What year was that?
It was 1986, Mike.
86. I was probably set up that steel cage in that ring that time too.
I was 9 years old. It started with Steve Lombardi and Tony Gurria.
Yeah.
They kicked the whole thing off. You had Retreat on the card. You had Brutus Beefcake and Rotunda. You had Honky Tonk Man. I got the card pulled up in front of me because I was so pumped. I couldn't wait.
Bad News Brown. Was he on the card?
You had Bad News Brown. You got Junkyard Dog. King Harley Race.
Yep.
Hercules against Billy Jack Haynes.
Wow.
Kamala against Corporal Kirshner, where they had to stretcher Corporal Kirshner out because he got so many freaking belly splashes. They had to stretcher him out. So, dude, it was a great time. First card I ever went to is at the Spectrum.
That's awesome. Awesome.
There you go.
Awesome. Yeah, another good thing. Allen Iverson showed up one day with his entourage and got to meet Allen Iverson.
I popped
huge, and he was like, yo, Mike Chioda. I was like, what the fuck? I'm like,
hey, I knew you.
Big fan. He is big wrestling fan back in the day, man. He was a big fan. I was just like, I popped huge. And then I ran into him at the Blue Martini, the Continental, or down the street from the Blue Martini. I ran into him, wound up hanging out with him one night down there.
I can only imagine what that night was like.
It was wild. It was wild. A lot of tits and ass at that bar.
Oh, I can just see the questions flooding in about that night for the next mailbag.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was in Old Town. Blue Martini used to be right down the street from the Continental. And it was just, and we went to the Continental, had some martinis and dinner, and me and my boy, a couple of friends went down to the Blue Martini, and Allen Iverson was in there. And then we went over, and I went over to say hello, and he's like, hey, sit down, party with us, man. Come on, brother. And I was like, yeah, sure, shit. And I don't know how we made it home that night, but.
Oh, Mike, the stories you can tell. Well, maybe we will this weekend at Top Guy Weekend.
Yeah, right.
RJ Krasinski.
RJ.
RJ Krzyzewski's up next. He says, embrace the power of the fast forward button, buddy. They already have. As soon as I read your name. My questions this week are as follows. Oh my God, he's got a list. What is one singles wrestler, tag team, and faction that never got the proper recognition they deserve? What is this, a three-parter?
Dude,
get a fucking life, bro. One singles wrestler, a tag team, and a faction that never got the proper recognition they deserve. Mike, you're up. You're up, buddy. You're on the hot seat with RJ.
Yeah, I'm with RJ. That's a good question.
No, don't put him over.
Well, I don't think there's... I mean, I can mention a lot of guys that never got the recognition they deserved. You know, I felt like Test was one of them. He was a big guy, good worker, great looks. He could have, a great heel, could have been a baby face or a heel if you wanted to. Probably a better heel. But, there was a lot of guys I felt. I felt like Umaga didn't get the, as a singles guy. He didn't get the recognition he should.
I know, And yeah, you were a big Umaga fan.
Yeah, big Umaga.
But listen, he was athletic. He could do it all, man.
He was. For a big dude, he was quick in the ring. The way he's, oh my God, hell of a work. All Samoans are fucking great workers.
Yeah, man.
And, tag team, I don't know. Maybe, the British Bulldogs got a big push back then. Maybe the Rougeau brothers.
Oh, you were a Rougeau brother fan?
I mean, I liked them, I liked them. I mean, Jacques and them guys could work, man. I mean, you know, the Rockers got recognition. They were over.
They were great, but they were, yeah.
You know, and then, God, the matches that the Rockers and the Rougeau brothers used to have was
you,
phenomenal.
I thought, you know, with your love for Roseanne, I figured you were always a big Typhoon and Earthquake fan, too.
I actually was.
Natural disasters.
Because those guys used to move for big guys like that.
I know, man. They used
to fucking move.
Yeah.
And that finisher always looked great with Earthquake and, you know, Tugboat finish and... You know, just, oh, man. So, I mean, those guys can move. I mean, but, and they were huge. They were impressive.
Yeah, you'd like the beef.
Yeah. But I don't know. Bushwhackers were, you know, they were over. They were funny. They were comedy, you know, but tag team. I'm trying to think. Who do you think for a tag team? I'm trying to throw it back to you. Help me out here, Paulie.
Oh, man. I told you that to them. I don't know other tag teams. I'm trying to think who else that I would say, man, I really wish they could have done more with them.
Right.
Listen, I mean, the Steiners were in. They won the tag team titles for a little bit.
Yep.
They were gone. I wish the Brainbusters would have had more time in the Federation. I just talked to Arn about their short stint of a year, and then Vince wasn't, you know, giving them the money they thought they were going to get, and he was like, see you later, went to the gym.
What about IRS and Ted DiBiase?
Yeah, remember them?
They weren't kind of a...
I like Ted on his own and doing it.
Yeah, me too, and IRS, Mike Rotundo.
I wasn't hot on that gimmick, IRS.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Heavenly Bodies?
Heavenly Bodies. Now, listen, you get me there because I'm a Tom Pritchard fan. I love
me
Dr.
too.
Tom.
Me too. Tom Pritchard fan all the way.
He's the other one. He's the alternate mailbag that I work with on the alternate Monday. So he's just a great guy, dude. Love that guy. And the fact that he's been so involved with training so many superstars, man.
Right.
That's going to be his reputation for many years to come, is what he really birthed into the business.
Yeah.
In terms of helping create talent. So, all right, let's move on. RJ says, with the new stadium in the near future for my Buffalo Bills, do you think it should be an open roof stadium to let the elements play into the game, or should it be a closed roof, or does it really matter because Josh Allen is just so fucking good wherever he plays?
Oh, God. Well, I got two words for you there, kid. Kenny Pickett, all right?
No, so anyway, bro. Don't put that pressure on Pickett.
Yeah, well,
listen, I love Josh Allen.
But he's got to prove himself. He's got a hard schedule this year.
Hey,
so
some people are saying if he stays healthy, it could be.
And that's a good question. I think the elements got to play into it. I think Buffalo, when you used to see those games in Buffalo in playoff time and come October, November, December, and you see snow. And let me tell you, sometimes you think these snow games in 20, 30 degree weather and sometimes you go, oh, my God, they're not going to score any points. It's going to be too cold. Some of these games, like in Kansas City and Buffalo, they play great in the winter. You know, Pittsburgh. And
if I'm an opposing team, I don't want to come into Buffalo in the playoffs,
you're right.
Bro.
No, you're right. Well, not if you're from Kansas City or Pittsburgh or certain places.
Still.
But, I mean, you know, to me, it's like these teams, Kansas City and certain other teams that play around the league, you know, and they play outdoor stadiums, man. They're prepared, man. And
yeah, well, you dome them up, though. What makes them any different than anything? Yeah, that's right.
You know, I mean, these guys, and sometimes they play great, and sometimes it's so freezing that the games are low scoring. But, I mean, and sometimes they're high scoring. But I think the elements got to come. And when you're in Buffalo, I mean, you got to keep it open.
All right, there you go.
And that's the fun part.
Kyoto says, keep it open. There you go, RJ.
Yeah,
we're moving on. That way you guys can turn the show back on. Jeff, not the former Bears defensive back, Fisher says, Mr. Kyoto, would it be possible to discuss the process of setting up the ring from start to finish?
We got two more hours.
I know, man. Try to give us like...
All right. You set the frame up. You set the frame. You put the bottom cables on. You get the beams on after the frame. Then after the beams, you put your planks on. After the planks, the foam, canvas, string the canvas, tighten the canvas, and then you start setting up the ropes. Once you start setting up the ropes, you line them up and everything. You tighten your bottom cables up. Once you tighten your bottom cables up, you tighten up three corners. The last corner, you tighten up before the show.
Okay.
That's pretty much... of course, you got to tape your foam together. And that's pretty much the gist of it, you know, and laying the pads around the ring and then in the barricades as well.
There you go.
And that's last.
That's The Quick and the Dirty by Mike Hughes.
That's Quick and Dirty, yeah. But if you want to sit another hour, I can go through the whole thing.
Yeah. one day, maybe at a Top Guy weekend, we'll have Mike and Top Guys build a ring together.
There you go. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Zach's up next. Here he goes. Cause he's, this is, I love the way he starts this. Hey, Paulie B and Mr. C, it's your favorite Browns fan here. Guys, super stoked about the Survivor Challenge. The prizes are honestly a once in a lifetime reward. Best luck to everyone. Dude, I'm so glad to hear that. I'm glad you guys are digging the prize pack. We kind of wanted to brainstorm and make sure that you guys enjoyed that. He said, my question this week is for both of you as always. If you had to label the greatest WWE champion of all time, wow, who would it be and why? Love you guys. Take care and go Browns.
Yeah, go Browns.
Oh, boy. They got Baker the first week.
Oh, I know they do.
Oh, that'll be fun to watch.
Oh, that's going to be a fun one to watch. And I got news for your Brown fans.
Uh-oh.
Better not pick him in the Yahoo pool until week 12.
Oh, here he goes. And who knows if Deshaun will be ready by then.
Exactly. And he's going to be cold. He's going to be rusty. But anyway, I would really... Man, Triple H won it so many times. Ric Flair has won it so many times. Shawn Michaels. How many times has Shawn Michaels won the title?
Going to put me on the spot. I would have to say all time for Mike Chioda.
I would probably have to say
is a three-time WWE champion,
that was
a one-time world champion, and a one-time European champion, a three-time Intercontinental champion, a six-time tag team champion.
Right. He had a lot of champions, but not the heavyweight champion for a long, you know?
Yeah. Greatest WWE champion of all time.
Man. I'd have to say Triple H because he had it so many fucking times. You know?
So over Hogan, over Bruno, over all those guys.
Ooh, yeah, I'm going back to Bruno now. If you want to go back to Bruno, that's a little
different story. I'm just saying, this is of all time.
Of all time, yeah.
I gotta. You know what I'm going to say? I'm just going to go with Hogan. I'll get. No, but that's the champ of my childhood, buddy.
No, I know.
He revolutionized it. I was down watching Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling. Right. I was watching him on A-Team.
Right.
I was watching Hulk Hogan everywhere on Rocky.
Right.
And so when he took on Andre at WrestleMania 3, good God Almighty, that was the coolest thing I ever saw.
That was the coolest thing.
As a kid, man.
So I'm going to go with Triple H.
All right, there you go. I mean, you're trying to get your job back, Chioda. I hear
what
you're
trying to do. That's a good fucking point, too. Hey, Trip, you're the best fucking champion of all time.
I know what you're doing.
No, but I mean, he was what, 16-time world champ, right?
16? I don't think 16. That's was he 14? Flair and that's John Cena.
No, was he 14?
He's close, though.
He's close. He's got to be close. Because I remember... And Flair is really more than 16. Flair says he's 19.
He will tell you that they didn't count.
They didn't count it right. Right. This Flair told me that.
Tell everybody that.
Yeah, I know you will. I love it. But I mean, yeah, I've worked so many matches with Triple H for the titles. And, you know, he's just.
Listen, guys, here you go. Mike Chioda wanted everybody to know on this show. Triple H is the best WWE champion of all time. He's the most creative mind that's ever come to WWE of all time. He's the best hiring person they've ever had of all time.
He's Polish, too, so I'm
He's Polish. That pops Chioda. All right? He's the Mount Rushmore. If you had a Mount Rushmore wrestler.
I think his birthday is in August. Like, my birthday is in August, or his is at the end of July.
Mike Chioda's Mount Rushmore of wrestlers is Hunter Hearst Helmsley, that gimmick. It's DX Triple H. It's the general manager, Triple H.
Paul Levesque.
Paul Levesque. That's his Mount Rushmore.
That's it. No, fuck. But I mean, you know, see, Hogan had the title. I believe me, I put Hogan over all the time. Rock had the title. But who's had it more?
John Cena, Roman Reigns. You got
John Cena.
And Roman Reigns just did his 2-little-year anniversary, you know.
No, I know. Definitely. I'm not throwing away Roman Reigns. That's for sure. But I mean, he's nowhere where Triple H was. And he's nowhere where John Cena was, you know, right?
Yeah.
But he's getting there. He's getting there. So he'll be there. That's for
Austin?
Sure. No
what
doubt.
About Austin, buddy?
I know. And Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, I mean.
Stone Cold.
Yeah. I mean, how many times he had the title, though? A few times?
I don't know. It's just your favorite of all time.
Yeah, favorite of all time.
You already said it's too late. You said Triple H.
I would say Triple H, man.
Okay.
Yeah, because I, you know.
Go ahead. You can get off your knees and then do the rest of this podcast with me.
Okay, so now, fun. If I mention Triple H, it's
this is fun.
Like,
I love it. Look, this is great. Zach had no idea where we were going to go with that one.
Yeah,
Jared Bell's up next. He said, as a Bears fan, I wouldn't wish Trubisky upon anyone. He is not the answer to the Steelers quarterback situation. James Daniels, he said, James Daniels, offensive lineman, is a good player. I hope so, buddy, because our offensive line just makes me want to throw up after the preseason.
Exactly.
He said, my other question is for Paul. We hear you talk about your day job. So what do you do? And when are you able to record? Are many nights spent recording, buddy? Bingo. Here Bingo. I sit right now in the evening time recording.
At 9:30 at night.
Yeah, which we were supposed to start at 6:30. So, it's usually, man, usually it's at nighttime or weekends. Kurt Angle's the one exception. We are locked in on Fridays at 1, and I'm able to work from home a lot of times, thankfully. And I have that locked in on my calendar, and it's all good. And my shoot job, okay, well, we'll just get into it right here for everybody. Whenever you see them big yellow trucks drive by with that Penske logo
Penske.
On it, that's where I work for their corporate offices in Reading. They have about 1,800 people on their campus here. Mm. And I am the director of their inside sales team, have about 20 people that report to me there. And then I also am in charge of their sales communication. I do a weekly sales podcast for about 1,000 people. And the sales organization, and nice. I also do sales talk with a lot of senior executives, and that's a video series. Buddy, I'm busy, okay? So, but I love it. I love Penske, and they're a great company. And I actually got to go out to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Mike, earlier this summer.
Oh, cool.
And I got to race around the track there. Roger Penske owns that.
Nice,
and I got
nice.
To tour that. So,
if you're trying to rent a truck, folks, from Penske, and your rates go up, blame Paul Bromwell.
Nah, I'm on the leasing division, not the rental side. So that's what I do, man. I enjoy it, and I have a great team. And awesome. The cool part is my boss is a wrestling fan. When they found out that I did this, videos started being passed around like senior leaders, and they were like, we got to have this guy start doing some stuff like this for our company.
Oh, cool.
That started about a year ago. So it's been
really that's cool. good. Good.
Yeah, good. Man. Dylan Hager's up next. What's up, Mike and Paul? Recently had the but I'll tell you what, I can't say on the Penske podcast, Mike.
Yep.
Okay, I can't say fuck, shit, hell, bitch, damn. None of that stuff flies. We're not talking Roseanne. We're not talking Wet and Wild.
It's yes, sir, no, flies. Ma'am. Excuse me.
Let's talk about how we're going to pivot through the organizational rough times this year.
Exactly.
It's none of the shit we say on the show, bro.
I got all right, you.
There you go. I can let my hair down.
You had to get that out.
Yeah. I can't say any of that. Dylan's up next. Dylan Hager. What's up, Mike and Paul? Recently had the opportunity to meet Jimmy Hart.
Oh,
any
yeah.
good stories about the mouth of the South? Thanks, guys.
Man, just always a great guy. A lot of charisma, a lot of spunk. He was just always just high energy, and he still is high energy, and just a great guy, and just love working with Jimmy, man. He knew how to work with the referees all the time because, you know, him coming up with that microphone always just distracting the referees, and just love working with Jimmy Hart over the years and the years ago, and just a lot of fun. Great guy. Never hung out with him anywhere else or anything like that, and never traveled with Jimmy. I was always driving the ring trucks and stuff. But just always a great guy. Just such a very polite guy. Real good guy, man.
Yeah. Jimmy, just, the mouth of the South. He still looks exactly the same, bro.
I know. And it's just like, I seen him not too long ago at a signing. I was like, holy shit, he looked great.
And same mullet, same head of hair,
same thing, man. It's just, you know, it's awesome because, you know, he's just I enjoyed watching him do his thing on the outside of the ring all the time, man. It was just a lot of fun. A lot of fun working for him and with him, you know.
Hey, and he did music. I mean, he
everything
was...
All
right, Brad Stanton's up next. He said, just rewatched a couple of Eddie Guerrero matches. Is he a close second to Ric Flair as far as being the dirtiest player in the game?
Yeah, I'd say Eddie Guerrero is probably the second. I miss Eddie, man. God bless him. And used to love doing his matches, man. So had some good fun memorable matches with Eddie. So yeah, he knows how to, what was lie, cheat, and steal?
Lie, cheat, and steal, baby.
That's it, man. Lie, cheat, and steal.
With his mamacita.
That's it. Yep. And you know, I always said, you know, win if you must, lose if you, I mean what? Lose if you must, win if you can, by all means cheat. That's what I used to say.
I always love when Kurt starts talking about Eddie. We were just in Wisconsin, got to do a live show there, and he was talking to Eddie, and man, you know, it's always good to hear those stories.
Yeah.
So there you go. Scott Michael Fari is up next, and he says, Mr. Chioda, there was a time when I felt ref bumps and distractions were used often enough in a match that as a fan, it felt kind of lazy to me. Did anyone ever try and involve you in a spot in a match that resulted in you running your fingers through that sweet, sweet mullet and saying, that doesn't work for me, brother, because you thought it would make you look bad or harm your credibility since all the fans knew you were the best ref in the motherfucking business?
Man, I appreciate them words. No, man, I never said that, man. Like, you know, when I was put in a certain spot, especially when I had the mullet, I did what I was pretty much told, bro. You know, I mean, there was no, like, you know, referees shouldn't go into business for themselves. That's for sure. You know, the only way you'll mention things like that is when you're experienced, you got some years under your belt and you don't feel like it fits or something like that, but you would work it out to where, whether it's a different bump or a different way to get into the bump to knock the referee out, or, and it depends. There's different bumps. You know, there's going to be a certain kind of bump that's going to put the referee that he gets back up in a few minutes. There's a certain bump that referee takes in a match where it's going to knock him out for the rest of the night. You know, or it's just a flick to the eye or something. You just abrase where you just, for a quick couple seconds, where you just don't need to see something. But no, I never had that attitude when I had, you know, especially when I had the mullet, you know.
especially when I had the,
it was like,
mullet.
Yeah, no problem. Oh, super kick to the face? Yeah, sure, no problem. Okay, great. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he just freaking did it at Ric Flair's last match.
Yeah, that too, right?
He said, P.S., Conrad probably made enough money off of the Flair pay-per-view that he should be able to afford you for a weekly mailbag show.
Fuck, I love this guy.
That's fucking right, bro.
I love this guy.
Scott Michael, bro, you nailed it on the head, bro.
Man, Scott, I fucking love this dude, man.
I know, man. Throw that in his next ass, Connor. Yeah. See how that comes back. All right. There we go. John Levitt is
come
up.
Come on,
next.
Connie.
Connie, give us the dirt.
Give us the dirt.
All right. John Levitt's up next. He said, hey, guys, thank you so much for making me feel welcome and for answering my first time question last show about Montreal. Buddy, we're glad that you're
thanks
chiming
for
in with questions, man. So
definitely
glad to have you here. He said, Mr. Chioda, are you a fan of hockey? If so, which team? Is he a fan of hockey?
Oh, yes.
Oh my God.
Pittsburgh Penguins.
You've adopted the Lightning, too.
Yeah, I adopted the Lightning. I mean, because, you know, when my Penguins are knocked out, I'm going to root somebody else in, and whether it's, you know, and I'm always usually like, it's either Philadelphia, but the Tampa Bay Lightning, living here now, just, you know, support them a little bit, too. So, and, you know, what really sucked, you know, living in Houston for like 14, 15 years, man, there was no hockey on local stations or around anything. You know, you used to get Dallas on, you know, because Houston didn't have a team in hockey in NHL. So, but living here, man, you get other games on ESPN, especially you get the Tampa Bay Lightning. Feel like I'm back in a hockey mode here. So, I mean, I would go watch the Stanley Cup in Texas, in Houston. Excuse me. I used to go watch the Stanley Cup there. And somewhere when want to go out, and nobody else would be interested. They'd have soccer on, they'd have rodeo on, they'd have fucking this on. I'm like, what the hell, you know? But yeah, Pittsburgh Penguins, man.
Yeah, and so it's funny because when the playoffs were on, you're talking to me about hockey, I'm talking to you about basketball. That's
right.
Just kind of how it was. I mean, you're all in, especially when the Lightning were still going.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and love some hockey playoffs, man. That's so intense. I actually got my wife into NHL hockey. She absolutely loves playoff hockey and, you know, good hockey games. So she gets into it tremendously now. And she wasn't a hockey fan at all for years because, you know, living up in Houston, you didn't have any teams.
All right. John goes on. He said, now for a wrestling question. Did you ref any matches on Saturday night's main event? A fan, what is your favorite classic Saturday night's main event match, by the way? His he was talking about his being Hogan versus Big Boss Man in that classic blue cage and in the appearance by Zeus. Thank you both. Paul, you've won me over. Conrad who? LOL, buddy. Oh, man, don't get me kicked off this show. Okay, so I appreciate the love, but, man, I appreciate you listening. So what do you think, Mike? What is one of your favorite matches on Saturday night's main event, and do you have a favorite Saturday night's main event match?
Well, favorite Saturday, I didn't do it, but it was that Hogan. It was the switch with the Earl Hebner and Dave
Hebner.
Yeah.
That was like that the Friday night. They called that
Dick Ebersole. Yeah, Dick Ebersole. Yeah. I remember was there watching up in Gorilla with Vince, and yeah, it was just a big fucking hit, man, that night. Wish I was a part of that match, but I'd have to say that's one of my favorites, man. That was one of my favorites all time.
You know what mine was Hogan Orndorff and the Big Blue, that the time finish where they both landed at the same time. That was January of 87, and they had the little stopwatches, and one was coming down on one side and one was coming down the Big Blue on the other side.
Right.
And it was Ventura and McMahon. They landed it. Orndorff got the win, McMahon. And Vince was like, no, I believe it was Hogan. And that to me was like, what is happening? Who won? Rewind it. We got to watch it again.
Right.
Never forget Hogan Orndorff, Big Blue, and that whole finish.
Now, I don't remember that, but you remember a lot of shit.
Oh, my. Yeah, well, I've got problems. All right. Adam Simmons is up next. He said, in a shoot fight to the death, who wins, Mike, between Haku, Bart Gunn, and Ken Shamrock?
Ooh. Man, let's see. Haku in his prime, Ken Shamrock, badass dude.
And Bart Gunn,
hell of a boxer. Man, I have to say Haku.
Yeah, man. Arn Anderson calls him the human Vegematic.
Brother. Oh, does he really?
Yeah.
Brother, he was, let me tell you, Haku was one badass guy. And I've been at some places where he'd been in some fights, and I've seen him take some fucking people out. And especially in Japan. I remember one night we were in Japan, and he took some boys out in the club. They were just getting too drunk and everything and just too wild. And it was actually, you know, military from the U.S., you know. So they were just, and then Stacy Keebler, I remember Tori was there. Yeah, man, Haku. I mean, Haku and then Barbarian too, man. Barbarian was a badass dude too, so. And I'd have to say Haku, man, in his prime. You know, even,
all right.
I don't know. I know I'm not taking away from anything from Kenny Shamrock in his prime. He was badass too, but I'd have to go with Haku.
Haku, there it is. He said, sure. If you two had to choose a two-man commentary booth for a wrestling promotion, which two commentators make your cut?
Paulie B and Mike C.
God. They would be like, guys, you're supposed to talk about the match, all right? Focus on the fucking match.
Oh, Lord. God, I don't know, man. That's a good question. You know, I enjoyed all the commentators. All the way to Michael Cole, to Jerry the King Lawler. JR is the best, one of the best.
Yeah, JR is one of mine.
And, I even like Corey Graves, you know,
Graves is solid.
He's solid, man.
He is.
Maybe that kid Josh.
What?
Remember?
I know who you're talking about. Oh, he was in TNA then. What was the kid's name?
He's actually working for the TV truck for,
Josh Matthews?
Yeah, for the pay-per-view.
Are you talking about Josh Matthews when he was there at WWE?
Yeah. No, but let's see. I don't know. Who would be your pick?
So JR's
help
one
me
of
out
them.
With this.
JR's one of make, them. And then
oh, you're saying, who doesn't get cut? Or?
No, it's saying you have two to choose from for a two-man commentary booth. Who are you picking for any wrestling promotion? You get to pick.
Oh, fuck.
Like a dream team.
Oh, a dream team. I thought you would cut somebody.
No. Who are you picking as a dream team?
I fucked that up. Sorry.
That's all right. Hey.
I would say, yeah, JR. Bobby Heenan.
Buddy, it's so funny that you say that. I have Jim Ross, and then I went through the questions.
Oh, yeah.
And then I have either Heenan or Ventura.
Yeah, Ventura was badass too, yeah. But I'd say Heenan.
Yeah, Heenan's so good, dude.
Heenan's so fucking
good.
And I loved so eating with Gorilla Monsoon on the TV shows and all those shows. They were the best together. They clicked. You know, Freddie Blassie was, Ventura was good too. But yeah, Bobby Heenan, I'd say.
Listen, man, Bobby, Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby were fantastic. The only reason I would go JR is because there's no one who brought the excitement level up like Jim Ross.
That's right. Jim Ross brought it up there. He sure did. And imagine with Jim Ross bringing the excitement level on, and you got the smart-ass Bobby Heenan. Or Bobby Heenan and Jerry the King Lawler. I mean,
those two would be just tripping over each other to try to get their jokes in.
Right. That's true, too.
Adam goes on and says, what's your favorite WWE Playboy issue ever?
Every one of them.
D, all the above.
Every fucking one of them. Sable, where'd you get that one, Paul?
Thank you, Mike Chioda. If you're watching on video, baby, you guys are seeing mine.
That's it. That's a nice one too, boy. That is nice one. You got it. I got Sables over here. I still got LaToya Jackson's.
LaToya Jackson. I'll never forget when I had Rhonda Shears from USA up all night.
Up all night. I don't know, man. I'll tell you, I have to probably say all of them. Because if you ain't on the fucking cover of Playboy.
You had China.
Yep.
I'll never forget. And then Tori and Sable did one together. Christy Hemme did one. Candice Michelle.
Yeah.
Eric Bischoff talked, Stacey Keibler out of.
Yeah, the I remember you telling me that, right? Yeah. I remember Christine Brinkley ever in one of them? She had to be.
Brinkley? I don't know if Brinkley did.
No. God. Cheryl Ladd was a hot one too.
Oh yeah, she was in Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, she was hot. I'd probably say all of them because if you ain't,
Maria Kanellis was there.
Oh man, I don't know which one's your favorite one, Sable.
Come on now. Okay. There was such a buzz when she first did it because she was so popular.
Yeah, that's true.
So it was like, oh my God, we can't wait.
That's true. We get a phone call from Brock tomorrow.
You know how many people have said that about his wife? God, he'd be busy. 7 seconds left on the clock. You're down 6 in the red zone. Who's your quarterback? And why is it the GOAT, Tom Brady? Oh, God. Oh. So who is it, though, Mike? I mean, I guess,
man, Doug Flutie.
Doug Flutie. No,
just kidding. Fran Tarkenton.
Fran Tarkenton.
Roger Staubach.
People are Googling these guys.
Fuck, I know. You have to say, you're going to have to say Tom Brady. It's hard to argue against it. He gets the ball off.
Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, he could do that too.
Aaron Rodgers. And then you're going to have to talk about Patrick Mahomes too.
But Tom Brady just gets it.
Tom Brady does.
Brought them back against the Falcons in the Super Bowl
I know. That was fucking
Who has
amazing.
That moxie?
Oh, my God. He's done it 7 fucking times. He's got more championships than any franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah, the GOAT, man.
He says, go Pats, keep up the great work, Paulie B and Coyote.
All right. I like that.
Look who finally joined the fray this week. This doesn't seem right. This has how far down the list he is. And I'm very disappointed in you, Michael McClanahan. We're finally getting to your questions. Come on, Mikey.
Way down there.
Yeah. All right, here he goes.
What's up, Mikey?
Since September is back to school time, I wondered if Mike and Paulie had any fun memories of watching wrestling with their friends from their school years.
Not really, because a lot of my friends weren't into wrestling. I mean, I was watching it, and because I was working, because I knew Joey, Gorilla Monsoon, as a young teenager, and then I worked as, when I was 15, 16, in the summer times and the weekends, a lot of my friends weren't into wrestling. So, I mean, I watched it, and then I became, and I started working it at an early age, full time at 18, almost 19. So, I mean, a lot of my friends didn't watch wrestling, man. So I got to say, they weren't interested. A lot of my friends,
Yeah, know? So I had the opposite experience. I mean, two of my best friends growing up were big fans. And, man, once we got a little older, that's where my house was, the pay-per-view parties. It was right. Dominoes. It was, you know, we were making brownies.
Right.
We had right. the Tostitos with the...
What kind of brownies were you making?
Yeah, you know what kind of brownies. Okay. They had the Tostitos with the cheese dip that Frito-Lay made, buddy. That was like, it was like clockwork, buddy.
Yeah.
And I had that DirecTV card that was programmed. I had a guy that would program the chip.
And you plugged it in.
So for about 2.5 years, I just plugged it in and I got every freaking station.
Right,
about
right.
2.5 years, so they always came to my house for the pay-per-views.
Nice. Yeah,
I was illegal.
Yeah, it was just, you know, and I used to just sit back and watch. Sometimes I used to rerun the Spectrum TV and stuff like that, you know, rerun that. You know, I used to watch. My friends weren't into it. They were all into, like, we used to go to rock and roll concerts.
Yeah,
all the time.
You were a big music guy. Yeah,
big music
cool
guy,
too, man.
Baseball guy, and stuff like that. Going to baseball games, and
yeah.
We had Phillies season tickets. You know,
good
and
for
all
you.
That, so, yeah.
You saved your wrestling time from when you were making money on it,
right? And my friends got into it when I started showing up on TV. That's when they got into
then
it.
They wanted tickets.
they wanted tickets, right?
Know how that goes. Hey,
and autographs.
If Mike could teach a master class on the topic of refereeing, what matches would he recommend someone watch to see great refereeing technique? To make this interesting, Mike is not allowed to pick a contest he refereed. And Mike's going deep, bro.
That's a good one. I'd have to say the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match Charles Robinson did. I have to say Dave Hebner, God bless him. With the Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Macho Man match, I'd have to say,
even though
there was probably not much for Joey to do, but I have to say, Joey with the Hulk Hogan and Andre match, you know, I mean, that's just to me, that's just memories when he passed the torch on to Hogan, you know,
yeah,
and Joey was just a part of that, but and then Joey went on, you know, of course, I always remember the one match I loved in Wembley Stadium in 1992 in London when he did the British Bulldog Bret Hart match.
Okay.
It went 45 minutes, 42 minutes.
Classic matches, man.
Those were some classic matches. So I have to say those matches stick out. And I'm sure I'm missing something of Earl Hebner's.
Oh, that's okay. But you listen to
Earl Hebner's did a ton of great matches I've seen, absolutely. You know. And I know there's one that Brian Hebner did. Like we talked about it, how I did mostly every match in that Kurt Angle Brock Lesnar matchup for a good couple years, and then Brian did a match. It was the 1 hour marathon match or something.
Yeah.
And and that was a hell of a job that Brian did in that match. And I actually just talked to him the other day, so I'll see him this weekend. Yeah, he gave me a call Friday night. It was nice to talk to him, catch up with him, man.
Oh, that's cool.
So
that's
it was
good.
Really nice to talk to Brian and. So we talked for a little while and everything, and we're going to
see. And you'll see him at the wrestling show.
Yeah, he'll be there this weekend. So, yep, that's awesome. But I have to say, some of the matches, that's for sure.
Awesome. Ashley's up next, Mike. He said, "What was your favorite angles or storylines that you were a part of? Any kind of favorite angle or storyline that you were a part of?"
It was just the one the strike stuff that we and when the referees went on strike, and I remember everybody turned on Jim Corderas. We were in that storyline a little bit. The one with the, I'll never forget doing that match. Like I mentioned earlier with, The Rock and Jericho against the Dudleys and
that's
Nick Patrick.
You got to have a tag team match.
Yeah, I got to have a tag team match, which I don't see too many referees doing at all anymore, you know, and that was 20 years ago.
You got to drop that sweet people's elbow. Oh, man.
Selling Bubba's fucking clothesline all the way through. I did his radio talk show, man, not too long ago, about a month ago. We talked.
Yeah, before Ric Flair's last match.
Yeah, that was fun. So
that's cool.
But, I'm sure I might have been in maybe a couple little storylines, but nothing big, you know. I don't think there was anything really that big, you know. Not huge, you know, so where I did a storyline that went on for a while, you know, everything was kind of like, you know, the strike was a couple weeks or a few weeks and over with and so forth. And I never did no referee switcheroony or anything like that, or no heel shit.
Yeah,
as a referee. So
did you ever do the spinner Rooney, Mike, in the ring?
Speaking tried of Rooney's, to, man. That shit was hard.
Yeah, he tried to get you to do it.
Sorry. And I was a dancer back then, going to clubs and dancing and doing this. And but man,
what was your go-to dance move? Were you like watering like, the lawn or
no? It was the bus stop. The old school bus stop.
Oh man, I wish
we I'd go back period. To the Commodores and
I love
and
it.
All that Parmalee Funkadelics and all I that other it. Shit. So
but, good stuff.
Yeah, but. Yeah, it's Spinneroonie couldn't fucking do it, man.
That's okay.
That was Michael an easy Green, thing to do.
Oh, it doesn't look easy. There ain't no way this ass could get down there and do that. Michael Green's up next. He said, "Hey guys, I haven't asked a question in a while, but I've been listening intently every other week." Michael, thank you so much for listening, checking it out.
Yeah, thank
he
you.
Says, "I recently saw that Mike was the third guy in the ring. Well, technically the sixth guy, counting Pat Patterson, Briscoe, and Sergeant Slaughter yeah. for Mr. McMahon versus Stone Cold on the Raw that ended Nitro's 83-week winning streak.
Right.
Does Mike have any fun experiences with Vince in the ring? Love the show, guys. Thank you for the entertainment." So, Mike, anything fun stick out to you just being in the ring with Vincent Kennedy McMahon?
Fuck no. And the reason why, I was just saying, though, you were stressed with Vince in the ring. You didn't want to fuck up.
Yeah, good point.
You know, and if he called and if he asked for a spot or asked for something like, "Hey, what's next?" then you better know it. You know what I'm saying? So, and, you know, and what I liked about Vince is, you know, when Vince asked you to do something, you said, "I can get it done." It was never like, "Oh, I can't do that." You know, there's always a way to get things done. But you just didn't want to screw up, you know, being in a ring with Vince, you know. And you always had to make sure, especially when Vince got a little older, even though the guy's in phenomenal shape all the time and still is, you know, you just didn't want to screw up, and you had to take care of it, make sure, the boss was good in the ring.
Pressure's on, though, buddy.
And that was the pressure. That was pressure on. So, you know, I mean, I remember the day he blew out his quads in the ring, just walking down to the ring, you know, and got in the ring and blew out his quads. It was like, whoa. We went out to the ring, and we're like, "All right, don't touch him, don't touch him." He was like, "Don't die, I blew out my quads." You know, I'm like, holy shit. Like, you know, so it's always stressful when you're in the ring with Vince, man. It's just, you didn't want to fuck up, that's for sure, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the last person you want to fuck up as a referee.
Oh, being in the ring I can with Vince, imagine, you know? Buddy, because you know you're going to get your ass chewed out.
Yeah, and but every time at the end of the night, man, when he comes over and shakes your hand and gives you a hug, shakes your hand, says, "Thank you, Mike. You know, like, great job." You know, that's made you feel 10 times better. So
that's right.
You know, that was the payoff.
Brian Harems is up next. He said, "This question is for Mike and Paul. If you could only watch one sport for the rest of your life, which sport are you watching and why? It has to be pro or college. It cannot be both." Mike, you go first.
Oof. All right. Well, college football is too short for me. One sport for the rest of my life, it would have to be, God, even though I was a baseball player too, man, for a long time and played a little bit of football for a few years. God, I want to say football, even though it's going 18 weeks. I don't baseball, I'd have to say. If it's one sport for the rest of my life,
Major League Baseball?
Because they play 162 games. And then they gotta go into the playoffs and World Series. And then when you get to the World Series, I mean playoffs, and every pitch counts, every base runner counts, every out counts. I'd have to say baseball.
Okay.
I would watch baseball because it's long. You know, 162 games. Playoffs and then World Series.
Yeah, I got you.
What would yours be?
It'd be
lacrosse.
No, underwater basket weaving. No, it would be. It would definitely be pro football, dude. To me, it's like it's when it comes. There's such an excitement because it is gone for so long that you're just watching every NFL Total Access show. You're watching SportsCenter. You're in the training camp. You're looking at who they're cutting down. You're building, thinking about fantasy football.
Yeah.
And I think it's the fact that it's not so much of it that makes you want it and yearn for it more. I just love professional football. I love the Steelers. I love it all so much.
No, and I do too. I would say pro football too. I was thinking about that, but there's so many injuries in football. Like, yeah. if Aaron Rodgers goes
But again,
down,
you can only watch the sport the rest of your life. That's right. All you get, one sport. Right.
I know, yeah, it's true. One sport. It'd have to be 162 games of baseball, even though baseball's kind of like...
I know, man. There's so much slow
so many
time
games, and they don't even... It's. I seem like they don't even play their hearts out.
I go to the beach in the summer. There's a lot of shit I'm doing during the summer. I'm not paying attention to half their season.
Yeah, I'd have to say baseball, though.
All right, that's good. I love that's my in your blood, football. Though. That's in your blood.
It is.
You played.
It is.
All right, Lauren Eason says, which wrestlers was Mike Chioda comfortable and uncomfortable with taking bumps from?
Let's see. Even though I broke my nose, taking bumps and done other things, I'd have to say nobody. I don't know. I never took a bump. I mean, like, even, you know, John Cena taking bumps, it was good.
Ken Shamrock, all those guys bumped
Ken
you
Shamrock
around.
But that was, you know, he was good too, man. I mean, the ankle lock, he did a belly to me. Never got hurt on any of them. You know, some were stiff, but you had to make it look stiff and look good, you know. But I can really never say, even though I got hurt on a lot of bumps here and there, some of them. Oh, Ahmed Johnson.
There it is.
I got put in the hospital for 2 days, remember? he tried to throw me over the top rope. And he tried to throw me from the center. He was so blown up.
I remember you told that story.
Yeah, I told that story. I didn't say Ahmed Johnson.
There you go. Uncomfortable you go. Ahmed, comfortable everybody else.
Yep, that's
it. Did you ever referee a lot of Ultimate Warrior matches?
Yes.
Yep. But did you never gotten any kind of bumps with him?
No, not really. I don't remember, no.
Okay, because I know he could be a stiff guy, too.
Everybody called him an asshole, too, but he was cool with me.
He was fine with you?
Yeah, he was really, to me, Jimmy was really good guy to me, man, you know.
Is that how you knew him, Jimmy?
Yeah, Jimmy Helbig, yeah.
That's cool.
I knew, you know, it was Jimmy, you know, at first, and, you know, it said Jimmy. I never said Warrior. Yeah, hey, Warrior, you know, hey, Jimmy, you know, hey, Jim, you know.
Yeah, and he was cool with that.
Yeah, he was cool with that. I mean, Jimmy was always a cool guy. You know, I know he had his differences with a lot of people in the business, but it was great to see him come back and go to the Hall of Fame, and then what happened to him, it was just, what the fuck, you know?
Heart-wrenching.
Passed away, yeah, it was just unbelievable. You know, he was out of wrestling for so long, and I was glad maybe he'd come back, and I didn't think be an agent, but be a little bit of a face or something, you know what I'm saying, around?
Ambassador.
Ambassador, maybe, at a company or Legends deal or something, and he passed away. It's really sucked, you know. But
yeah, Lauren goes on to say, what were your initial reactions when you learned ECW and WCW talent was coming to the WWE? So was that something you were excited about, as the infusion of this talent from these
how couldn't people? I be excited? I mean, you had Paulie coming in, you had RVD, you know, some of the best pot smokers in the WWE in the professional wrestling business.
I love how you look at it.
I loved them, man. They were just funny guys and loved Rob. You know, Rob always lived by the three T's, you know, toke, train, and tan. So it would always be toke, training, and then hit the tanning bed. It was a lot of good talent, a lot of good people, man. You know, I mean, and that's when even Tommy came in too, you know? I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, there was a lot of good talent coming in, man. A lot of hard work and talent.
That's how you met Charles Robinson when he
came from WCW. Yeah, all those guys. So, yeah. I mean, you know, I loved it, you know? And being a referee, you know, if you were one of the boys, you're looking at these guys. Well, I remember all those guys from ECW walked into Manhattan Center. Some of the guys had fucking boo-boo faces on some of the boys because they're like, oh, fuck, am I going to have to do the job for Rob Van Dam? Am I going to have to fucking do the job for the Dudleys or, like, these guys? You know, like, people, like, you know, some of the boys had probably boo-boo faces on. I remember that. So, you know, being a referee, I don't have to worry about doing a job for anybody. You know, I just, you know, count my 1, 2, 3, you know. And so it was just great to really embrace those guys coming into the business and got to be good friends with them. Because I knew some of these guys when they were at ECW. I used to go watch ECW shows.
I remember you said that. You used to go check them out.
Go see Rob and go see, you know, and hang out.
You were friends with, what's his name? The referee. Bill Alfonso.
Bill Alfonso. And, you know, and I used to remember to go see Rob Van Dam and some of the other boys. And so, I mean, it was really cool. I mean, I used to go to some of them places that were fucking wild, man. They were just wild wrestling in bars and fucking places.
I got to go see him wrestle there.
So it was cool, man. So
what an amazing time in wrestling back then.
Yeah, it was just, and it was awesome, you know, and, you know, go seeing them on certain nights when I had off, you know, so it was actually pretty cool.
Awesome.
To see them guys come in.
Leland Patterson's up next. He said, hey, guys, hopefully you get to this before you go to Chicago. Buddy, we are. He said, I told you I tried the deep dish pizza on a trip to Chicago over the summer. Paul, yeah. You asked where I went. You mentioned you had never been to Luminati's. I haven't. Well, it turns out that's where I went. I said, you and Mike go and check that one off the list as well. Buddy, I wish I could, but man, I'm fully ingrained in this low sugar thing.
I hear you, man.
I'm fully in, man.
I know, and I still got to lose some more weight too, man. I really would.
I've really stuck to it this time around, so I can't.
We used to get the cauliflower pizza, just the cauliflower pizza at Costco, which is a healthier pizza, you know. But we stopped getting that. You know, we're just trying to like just drop
some weight. My doctor saw me today and was like, buddy, what? She said, it's a female doctor. And she was just like, hey, I just got to tell you, whatever you've been doing the last, you know, little bit, just keep going because everything's looking good. So I'm like,
that's
all right.
Good.
I'm just going to keep rolling.
Brother, it kills me just seeing, you know, going to a place and you see good pizza. It's like, fuck.
Oh, dude, pizza's like a fucking drug, man.
Oh, it is, man. It's the best.
He said, I know, dude. I'm telling you. And yeah. So, and then he said, are you guys going to any of the AEW shows while you're out there? Yes, I'm going to All Out. So I'm excited for the pay-per-view.
Oh, cool. You're going to the pay-per-view?
It's Sunday night, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So I'm going to check that out. Mike, I don't think you're going. You're busy and then you're out, right?
Yeah, I'm flying home, yep.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I got to get ready to go to New York soon and a couple days after that do a signing.
Yeah, you're just doing all over the
place.
Doing
a virtual signing, so that's cool. So,
Mike, who do you think owns that footbed I tweeted to you? Do you remember seeing a tweet about that?
Yes, I did. That was fucking nice. Actually, you know what? I snapshot that. I got to send that to Snitsky. I meant to send it to him. I never did. I never fucking sent it. But no, I don't know whose bed is that.
See, you have to send that to me because I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, well, it's a footbed. It was 5 pop huge on that, man. I was like, what? That's the good. Fuck?
That was from Leland.
That was good.
He said, I'm stoked for the knockout pool. I'm all signed up and ready. Just hope I can make it past week one. Leland, me and you both, pal. You just never know. But listen, we get 3 chances. That's the beauty of this thing.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. That's it.
Yep. Jeff Ronquillo's up next. Yo, Paulie B and Mike C, thanks for taking time to answer my questions. Mike, I always appreciate it. You're the GOAT. And Paulie B, you're as cool as a fan. Keep doing your thing. Man, thanks, cool. Jeff. We love
you, Jeff.
You jumping in here every other week. He said, are either of y'all sports trading card collectors? If so, give us a peek into y'all's collection and what do y'all collect?
Man, I wish I was because I was just watching SportsCenter the other day.
Mickey Mantle?
And Mickey Mantle for $12.6 million.
Are you freaking kidding me, dude?
Fucking kidding? Now, I got a card here. It's not a baseball Topps card, anything like that. But I do. My dad got me a Mickey Mantle autograph. And it's a different type of card.
Oh wow, okay.
And it's like it's bigger than a regular baseball card, but it's autographed to me. But and I gotta find that. That's somewhere around here. But I wonder if that's maybe worth 1.6, maybe not 12, but 1.6.
If I look it up for you, can we split it? If it is, yes, I'm just kidding. That's awesome. So dude, when I was a kid, I was all in on baseball cards, like. I'm thinking late 80s, early 90s. I was all in on Griffey Jr.
Oh, yeah.
The first 89 Upper Deck set.
I had everything.
I had 87 top set with the border around it. 89 Donruss. I had a lot of 90, 91, 92. And I love the classic cards like the McGuire USA card or the Bo Jackson Future Stars card or Roger Clemens rookie card. Like a lot of those, the Ricky Henderson A's card. So what I did was I got out of cards because I felt like all of a sudden all these, and I had some Leaf. I had the Leaf Frank Thomas.
Right.
But then as I got older, I kind of got out of it because it felt like the card market was being inundated with all these brand new brands.
Right.
And then before the pandemic, I went back out and I forget what website I found, but I found nothing but graded cards. And I started buying graded rookies that I always wanted. So I had like a 10 Ripken rookie with like the three guys, the Topps Ripken with him and the two other guys on either side of him.
Right.
I bought a 9 Ricky Henderson rookie.
Wow.
I bought a couple big cards. Listen, this is a great story. So I end up deciding, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and just sell them. I don't know why I'm trying to get back into cards. So I posted pictures of them on Twitter. And Gary Vaynerchuk, the guy that's like, he's like a big time wine and big businessman.
Yeah.
DMs me. Hey, he knew the card market was about to explode. How much would you be willing to trade those for, like, wine? And I'm like, nah, I'm just looking for cash, dude. And he made me, you know, an offer or whatever, wow. But it wasn't what I was looking for. I ended up selling those cards. Mike, can I tell you that after the pandemic, when cards exploded again during that time frame, I could have made it. I had the Puckett Fleer traded Puckett rookie card.
Holy shit.
I could have made it so much money off those cards, but I pulled the trigger way too soon because the card market has exploded.
I know, bro.
One of my best friends is all into it.
I know I got to have some cards somewhere in these, deep down in these files I got in these bins. Because I used to have so many. I used to have Yogi Berra. I used to have because my
Tony Schiavone's big into card collecting, dude.
Oh, is he really?
Oh, yes. Still. He got back into it.
I used to, what was the cards back in the day when you used to pull out? I'm talking like the 70s and the 80s, when you used to get the big piece of bubble gum in it.
Oh, yeah. Tops would have that in the packs, crappy piece of gum. Yeah.
Right. The crappy piece of gum and everything. Yeah. I mean, I used to get all the baseball cards. I know I still got, I hope I find them soon because I am going to look for them because I know they're, I know I didn't throw them all out or get rid of them, but I never took care of them either. I didn't, like when you were a kid, you never knew they were going to be worth something like years.
Now what I went back and did, the one thing I do have is I do have the 89 Upper Deck set.
Yeah.
And I actually have it in a binder down here, all in plastic sleeves.
Right.
So I did, I think I went out and I just got some, I bought a couple boxes and I collected. I wanted to open all the packs, and I put a whole set together.
Wow.
And I did that a few years ago. So I literally do have that whole set.
Yeah,
so.
That's good. I know. I mean, I used to have Greg Luzinski's, Mike Schmitz, and got Pete Rose when he joined the Phillies. You know, I had Willie Stargell's, I remember.
Oh,
Dave
nice.
Parker's.
Clemente?
No, I didn't have Clemente's, but I had Kenta Colby's card. I had, you know, Bill Madlock's card, you know. I had some cool ass cards, and I was just like, I think I might get rid of all of them, or they might be somewhere in the bin, some of them.
Now, my son, we were going to Target and getting some Panini Select football.
Right.
So he has a couple Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert cards that we have sleeved and in plastic. But we were looking for Select again. I was like, let's pick one brand from Panini football and stick with that. Because, man, there's so many options. But buddy, they just came out with a hobby and they're selling boxes for like $1,500.
No.
I'm like, but that's too expensive for a kid. Now I don't know if retail's gonna come out soon.
Yeah.
But we're hoping to maybe get maybe a Pickett rookie card next year. Whatever. We're gonna get a couple something like that. But Select football, we're kinda just keeping our eyes out for that. And he has some nice cards from that.
Somebody has a Patrick Mahomes baby card or something, card.
My brother's a complete nerd with cards, but that's a whole I'm saving my brother's story.
Imagine what Tom Brady's cards are gonna be worth, like from 20 years ago when he started.
Well, cards right now are just off the charts.
Oof, unbelievable.
He says, Mike, when you decide to hang it up, what would be your dream match to officiate as your last match?
I'd have to say either Roman Rock or Brock and Rock.
And those are two badass matches.
I mean, too bad. I mean, like, you know, Brock's been around for many years, and look what he's still doing.
But,
still
going. But you and Rock had a special relationship.
And look at Rock, you know, where he's, you know, either Brock and Rock. Yep. Probably Brock and Rock. And in New Era, I would like to, my dream match would be like Rock and Roman Reigns. You know?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Oh, that'd be fucking fantastic. That'd be a good match too, you know?
Yep, I know.
The young against the older, you know, the old school against the young school. And Roman's not even young school. He's old school all the way anyway. So he's brought up old school, you know?
It would be so fun, man. And I can hope with this new regime that, and Triple H, what I like about him is he is a fan of wrestling. He's a fan of tradition and what got us there. And, you know, he's bringing Kurt Angle back on Raw the other night in Pittsburgh. He had Trish come out for, he respects the legends. And I mean, I'm just hoping that he does that with you. All right. With WWE being such a big entity and Vince having controlled it all,
I'll be collecting fucking Social Security.
You'll come down with a cane. I'm here. With WWE being such a big entity and Vince having controlled it all since forever, how long do you think it will take to start seeing Hunter's true vision unfolding? So there you go. Speaking of Hunter, how long do you think it'll until we absolutely feel like the Vince era is over and Triple H has put his stamp on the business?
Well, you'll feel it when you're watching the shows. You know, you'll feel it.
Already starting to.
And that's what people are saying. They're already starting to and stuff. And so, you know, you'll be able to see the swerves or maybe different things that, you know, and maybe the WrestleManias and the big pay-per-views would be like, you know, what they pulled off in SummerSlam. And maybe WrestleManias won't be so cut and dry like they usually are. You know, WrestleManias are just usually so cut and dry. Everything on the entrances, there's really no cheating going on, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. So you'll be able to tell, you know, that you'll see a difference because you'll feel it. You'll feel it.
And you're starting to now. You're seeing longer wrestling matches on some of the main shows. You're saying he's bringing talent back that we were disappointed to see go in the first place. It's going to be fun to watch, at least from my chair. His number four question, cue the Twilight Zone music. Do you believe there is life on other planets, Mike Chioda?
It's got to be. There has got to be. I believe there's something out there.
Somewhere,
somehow, you know, and the way they're starting to come out with these UFO sightings and all the shit that's been seen over the years and shit that just is on the satellite radar thing and it just disappears in a flash of a moment. I mean, there's got to be, there's a lot of hidden shit that our military has probably seen, you know.
That we don't even know about.
Yeah, there's got to be something out there. There's definitely got to be something. I know there's nothing on the moon, so.
There you go. Yeah, we've checked that out pretty thoroughly. All right, he says, football season is here. Cannot wait to see last year's big QB draft class in their second year. It's going to be interesting to see how these quarterbacks do in their second year. Right. That's for sure. And as always, I hate, in all capitalization, the Steelers, but love you guys. Well, We can't love you for all the reasons, Jeff, but we do love you for being a part of this show. And
that's truth.
Listen, we love our Steelers. And, buddy, I don't know. I'm just going to say it right now. I know Mitch is going to start the year, and I he's our starting quarterback. I hope he plays well.
Yeah, I know.
But Mike Chioda.
I want to see Kenny Pickett start off.
I just want to see the guy do his thing, brother.
You know, put him in. Put him in, man. Put me in, coach.
Put me in, coach.
I mean,
I'm
you know,
ready to play.
Right. I mean, you know, this kid, I think Kenny needs to start, man. I mean, say if Trubisky goes 0-2, what do you do then?
I'll tell you the first game's in Cincinnati, and if he loses or throws like 2-3
picks,
the pressure's going to be on Tomlin for that home opener on September 18th against the Patriots.
Right.
Kenny.
This kid's, I mean, just, I say throw him in there. I mean, hey, Trubisky, you know, I would rather go with your future quarterback, your main quarterback for the next so many years.
Hopefully let him make his mistakes his first year.
Let him make
year,
his mistakes.
Like Peyton Manning did, like all these other guys did. Tom Brady.
I mean,
They all made mistakes.
Look what they did with Joe Burrows. Look what they did with Herbert. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, let him go through the growing pains. Mac Jones.
And these guys, man, they made some mistakes.
The quarterbacks coming out now are a little bit different than they used to be.
Yeah, a little bit different.
Kenny Pickett went all 4 years.
You know, so I just want to see Kenny Pickett start. So, you know, I just don't want to see. I feel like fucking Tomlin's going to play this conservative offense. I do, because he's going to play so fucking conservative. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we got Pickens as a wide receiver. We got still some wide receivers.
Just need that freaking O-line to stick together. All right, Devin Dowling's up next. People are going to turn this off if we don't keep going. All right, hey, Mike and Paulie, what held back Tess from becoming a huge superstar in the early 2000s?
Probably because he was dating Kelly Kelly, Stacy Keibler. I don't know.
Oh, wow. It sounds like he was a hero.
He was a hero. He was my hero. I don't know. He just got his heat. I mean, I know Tess was a little cocky, had some attitude, but hell of a worker, big dude, good-looking dude. I mean, he had the looks. He was okay on the mic. You know, his mic work wasn't the best, but he was okay on it. But I don't know. He had a lot of heat here and there, you know, unfortunately. But, yeah, I really can't answer that question, honestly.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Devin's last question, Mr. 49ers fan himself. What food do you prefer to be store-bought instead of homemade?
Oof.
Man, that's an interesting question.
Store-bought. What food?
Versus homemade.
That is a good question.
I know, right? I'm like...
Like at a grocery store, I guess, then, huh?
Well, I mean, I'm going to buy my pizza from a store versus, I mean.
No, no doubt. Yeah, pizza or something like that.
I don't know, though. I'm just trying to think, what else could it be?
I know the rack of ribs at Costco is really good, man. I got these barbecue and something else ribs that are marinated. I'd probably buy ribs from a store like Costco or something, or certain type of steaks from a butcher.
Yeah.
Well, you can't homemade steak, so I mean,
I was thinking to myself, do you make a homemade steak?
Yeah, but you know, I sometimes.
Well, I got a cow here in the garage, and I know.
I fuck up the ribs sometimes too, man. You know, but
yeah, that's true. You can just throw those bad boys in the oven.
You throw them in the oven and stuff, and just
Hey, remember when you had me down and made and threw that Costco meatloaf in the oven? That was some good shit.
Yeah, the Costco meatloaf. But homemade would probably be better. My mom made a good meatloaf too, you know.
Man, I love a good meatloaf.
Yeah, I really don't. Damn, that's a good question.
Man, it is. You know what, Devin? I tell you what. Since you asked this, you obviously have something on your mind. When you ask the question for next mailbag, answer, you tell us what food do you prefer, store-bought instead of homemade? Because you got something in cooking.
Yeah,
and it might stimulate some stuff for us. So there
you go. I can't think of anything.
I can't either. It's too late, I think. He said, last up, but certainly not least, our buddy, the Mediocre Warrior. Sorry. Hey, guys, glad I could pop Mike with both questions. That's the whole point of my questions, to have a good time. Buddy, we love you.
And this
next part, it makes me sad. He said, by the way, Paulie, too bad I had to work Saturday night. My job is only 3 miles from where you and Kurt were in Appleton. Oh, well, maybe another time.
Oh, shit.
Are you freaking kidding me, dude?
He didn't
come
stop
on,
in?
Call out sick.
Oh, man, I know.
I would have loved to meet you, man.
Yeah,
and
I would have cool.
I would have had Kurt sign 85 things for you if you wanted and get a picture. I mean, you're our dude. You're ad-free shows.
Yep.
Come on. That's crazy. But, yeah, man, we had such a good time in Appleton, man. I mean, getting home was a shit show. I'm not even getting into that.
Yeah, you told me about
that. But, you know, just being there with Kurt, and it was such a good time, and we had such a fun time in Wisconsin. The people there at the baseball park were first class, Mike.
Nice.
I think it would be fun sometime to do like a show with Kurt and then like bring you in as a special guest. Like, we would have such a fun time.
I would love to do that.
Dude,
that'd
be awesome. Had 120 people there for the live show. Kurt was so good. Like, I know he gets a bad rap sometimes for short answers and things. He went an hour and a half.
Nice.
Ask Kurt anything. And nice. I'm like, Kurt, wow, look at you, buddy. And I was so proud of him on Raw. It's so good.
Yeah, nice, nice.
So here we go. Here's some questions. Mike, any memories of Outback Jack? Seemed like a decent guy, but was the drizzling shits in the ring.
Yeah.
And is it true you suggested he bring a kangaroo to the ring to get him over since you were the zookeeper? Since you were the zookeeper of the WWF.
I remember that. It's a tiny kangaroo downfall or something. It was something like that. I used to play that fucking tape in a cassette all the time.
Dude.
He was a great guy. Yeah, I know. He wasn't a great worker.
His name was Peter Stillsbury.
Was it Peter Stillsbury?
That's his birth name, okay?
Oh, my God.
Outback Jack.
Yeah, he probably needed me to bring a kangaroo down.
I mean, fucking dude, you probably, you would have probably, yeah, you were the, he is right, you were the fucking zookeeper.
I was the zookeeper. Fucking British Bulldog Matilda. And
you had the freaking
steak,
bird.
The bird. Yeah. We didn't have that bird too much. We almost killed that bird a couple times. So must have left it in the fucking truck too many times. Killed it.
We almost killed that fucking bird.
Yeah, you didn't say, no, Coco didn't trust us with the bird. I remember
oh
that.
Oh, my God.
That was something he had to take care of. Oh, shit. But that bird was a mess, too. God, shit everywhere.
Is shit everywhere?
Fucking food, fucking shit everywhere. Outside the cage. Well, anyway, but.
You're really having some bad memories of the bird.
How back. I remember that.
Man, now,
that
every time I'm going to go back and watch old wrestling matches and see that bird, I'm going to think how you just had a shit fit with it.
I'm glad we didn't.
Oh, there's Kyoto's bird.
Shit. Oh, my God. But, damn, tiny kangaroo. I remember fucking playing that tape. But, yeah, it was fun. I mean, I think he was, I don't even know if I ever repped any of his matches because I always remember doing crew or something. When he was around. He was around in the mid-80s, right?
Yeah, he was in the 80s, dude. I haven't pulled up here because I knew I would need a little bit of help. I remember Outback Jack, but he was like, he was wrestling. Jack. He wrestled a little bit guys like Mike Sharp, Barry Horowitz,
Rick
Rude, Tito, Ron Bass.
Yeah, yep. He was around for a couple of years, too. And it was
Listen, Outback Jack competed in his final televised match on Superstars of Wrestling in May of 88, teaming with Brady Boone and Steve Blackman.
Right.
The loss to the Islanders.
Right. Yeah, because he was only around for a couple of years, I remember. And I made my TV debut in 89, but I might have done a match or two with him, some matches with him. When I started refereeing, because I refereed for 2 years before I was on TV.
Listen to this, dude. In recent years, Stillsbury has been involved in Highland Games caber tossing events in Florida, whatever that is.
Really?
His eyesight has been declining. He is now blind in one eye and limited vision in the other. His sudden departure from the WWF has led him to being described as one of the most asked about people in the business.
Wow.
Really?
Wow.
No wonder the mediocre world wants to know about Outback Jack.
Yeah, right?
It's like That's the thing to do. Ask about him.
Ask about him. He was a great guy, remember? Wasn't he Australian? He was Australian, I think, too.
Yeah, he was an Australian. That's
I remember having the accent. Great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was. If he had the accent, got to make him Outback Jack. That's what Vince did back then.
Yep.
Listen, he started his career in Stampede Wrestling for Stu Hart.
Oh, no shit.
There's a little Outback Jack history.
A stiff worker.
All right, there we go. Did you ever have a yearning to sing along with Nikolai Volkov when he would do the Russian national anthem? I don't even know how it goes.
Boris Zhukov and Nikolai Volkov.
Oh.
But
come on, did you ever want to chime in with him and do a duet? Or
I remember when they used to start, they used to get booed so bad right off the bat. But
and Sheik. Sheik would go off on the crowd. Sheik. USA.
USA. But Nikolai Volkov, man, great guy. I remember I seen him for many years after the fact. He used to always come to the show and stuff, and I believe he was working for a school education system or something like that. Or
good for you, Nikolai.
Some town, municipal something. But I remember seeing him for years. I believe he's still alive, right?
Yeah. I hope he is. Let's double check before.
He's a great guy, But anyway, because I've never heard anything with Nikolai Volkov passing.
Well, but these things happen so fast sometimes, and it's like, man. No, dude, he passed 2018. Yeah.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, man.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God.
Yep, sure.
Yeah, great guy. Very nice guy. And just, I remember he was always very humble, man.
He died age of 70. He was released from a hospital in Maryland. We had been treated for dehydration and other medical issues.
Wow.
Isn't it something, man? As 70? Life goes by, 70 years old.
I thought he was older than that. Holy shit, okay. Damn. Yeah, nice guy, man. Very nice guy. God bless him. But no, I couldn't sing that Russian national anthem, no.
No.
And nor does anybody want to touch it right now.
Yeah. Nobody's sitting in the ring singing that now. So right. There you go.
Exactly.
Mike, we made it through. We made it through another episode. Next time you see each other, we're going to be hanging out in Chicago.
Perry Steakhouse.
Oh, man. I can't wait. Yeah, we're gonna find some time to sneak off and grab a little dinner together. And,
all right.
We got a live mailbag. Buddy, are you ready? Because these guys are expecting you to deliver. So we're going to have to get a couple drinks in you.
Yeah, we'll have to get a couple drinks, but
maybe you can tell some stories about your time with Allen Iverson in the strip club.
And yeah, right. You can tell some practice. Stories about that.
Yeah.
Who needs practice?
Yeah, we'll have a little fun. Listen, guys, thank you so much. Continue to throw those questions in. Our next show is September the 19th. Do you realize that by the time the next show drops, we will have already been, we're in week two of the NFL season?
Wow. We're going to be seeing who's already got the strike one.
Buddy, we're going to give an update. We're going to have a lot of fun. Loving this pool, man. If you haven't signed up, make sure you do it. You're going to have some time when this show drops to go do that before the first game on the 8th. So let's have some fun. We got a big grand prize out there. Mike, this has been a lot of fun this week, but, man, we are done. Thank you so much for all the fun this week, buddy.
Man, see you in Chi-Town, Paulie. Thank you very much, brother.
Sounds good. Can't wait to see you in the ring. Wrestling Showcase, Mike Chioda refereeing the main event there on behalf of the third man in the motherfucking ring, Mike Chioda. This is Paul Bromwell. We'll see you. Man, we got an hour and a half in again. That's all we do is talk for an hour and a half. I love
it. You're the man, Paulie B. You're the man.
Oh, I don't think so. We will see you right back here next time on the Monday Mailbag with Mike Chioda.
Thanks, Paulie B.